What's going on, everybody? Hope you had a great Christmas season, great Christmas holiday with family. We're back for another episode, Mason. Maybe a day late because both of us pretty much forgot what day it was on Tuesday, because, you know, having Christmas on a Monday just screws everything up. But we're back for our preview of the college football playoff and picks for the New Year's Six Bowl games, and just kind of getting back into it here at the end of the college football season. Mason, we're finally here, man. It's less than a week out. I'm sure you're getting nervous. How are we feeling?
So I've actually been nervous for a while now. The 2 week break didn't help me very much, because normally this is like a therapy session for me for some reason. So yeah, it was a tough 2 weeks, but I am super excited. Your championship is still alive. I hope you got it wrong, but I'm excited to hear it. And yeah, I just can't wait to get into this.
Yeah, man, it should be a great time. Speaking, you know, we did take a 2 week break for the holidays, and just because, you know, it's kind of the dead period and lower tier bowl games kind of going on. So wasn't going to be a ton of reaction from us. But let's kind of catch up on some things that happened during the break, Mason. One of the big things that happened pretty recently, actually, was Georgia getting a big transfer after having a ton of kids transfer out. They get a big transfer in, and that's Trevor Etienne, right? Trevor Etienne, the younger brother of Travis, transferring from Florida, going to Georgia. Big time pickup for Georgia, as they need some big breakout weapons on the offensive side of the ball, which was really kind of their kryptonite this year, besides Brock Bowers, obviously. So they get Etienne in the portal. Florida loses a big guy. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think this is really good for them, because the one thing that I don't love about what Georgia's been doing is they run like a three-headed committee almost in their running back game. And so I think with Etienne coming in, they'll actually be able to have a workhorse, somebody that they can have as the focal point of their running game. He was in a two-headed backfield at Florida for no reason. So I think him going to Georgia, he'll be able to take that over. And I think he's going to bring their offense to a new level. So that it'll be exciting to watch for sure.
Yeah, so that's a big pickup for Georgia there in the transfer portal, again, against their rival with Florida there. So another big thing that made some news, still Florida State making news, making waves out here. They're suing the ACC for their grant of rights to leave the conference. So they, one, make sure they have the rights if they leave, and two, don't have to spend the ungodly amount of money they would have to with the exit fee and everything else to leave the ACC. Where are they going to go? Big question mark. If it happens, will it even happen? It's probably going to take some time. Give me some reaction to that news.
So I'm going to be completely honest with you. I saw the story. I figured it was just another Florida State blunder. And of course it was. So I don't actually have much input on this one. So I'm going to have to hear more from you on this. Also, not surprising, because the grant rights deal that they have was very stupid. So, yeah, I got to hear it from you.
Well, first, I really haven't read any of the stories, so this is just like complete opinion here without reading too into like all the legalities and everything. One of the things I do know is that for the schools to even be able to read what their contracts are, they don't have their own copies of the contract. They have to go to the ACC headquarters and view it with an ACC rep there, cannot make copies or anything like that. So they have to view them and their lawyers, whoever wants to view that contract, has to go to the headquarters of the ACC to view it. And they can't take it home. It can't leave. They can't make copies. And to me, when you have some bullcrap thing like that, like, there's definitely something fishy and something weird. Why do none of your members have a copy of your contract of this stuff? Why is it? And maybe, like, all leagues do this. Like, this is just me speaking, not knowing how this stuff typically works. But me signing contracts for my home or for any other loan or any other bits of information, like, you get your own copy.
Yeah.
To be able to view the terms and to view everything, insurance policies, all this stuff. You have your own copies. You can access it whenever you want, wherever you are, if it's digital especially. And these institutions can't get their own copy of this contract with this conference? That makes no sense to me. And that just makes everything even more shady. of what it is, and them trying to basically cover their butts and not allow lawyers to be able to find comb through the thing to find where the loopholes are is basically what it is. Like that's what it ends up being of, hey, we're going to make it as hard as possible for lawyers for these institutions to find ways around the contract. And you know, if you're a good conference and a good commissioner and you make good deals, you wouldn't even have the problem. But because you're a crappy conference that doesn't know how to make good deals for your institution for football, you're in this situation. Because it's not just Florida State that raised issues. If you even remember in the offseason, there were rumblings from other schools. Florida State was just the loudest, but it adds on to the list of like Clemson, North Carolina, Virginia, Virginia Tech, and a couple other schools that were just as upset with the whole thing that was going on in the offseason, and then kind of quieted down once the season started and once the ACC made their grand announcement that they're adding Cal and Stanford and SMU to the league, because that makes sense. Because those are big, and specifically those California schools, big revenue makers for you in football, especially. Big time.
It's not even just football either. They're so great at basketball and baseball also. Just hard eyes for those
schools. Stanford's good at baseball, but everything else, not good.
All right, so let's say they actually somehow wiggle their way out of this deal. Where are they going? SEC, Big Ten, or are they going independent?
I just don't think the SEC wants them.
I don't think they do either. Honestly, I don't even know if the Big Ten wants them either.
I think the Big Ten would take them because they would want probably a southern market. They would get into Florida. They get a market down there. The SEC doesn't really, like, it makes sense more from a competitive aspect. But when it comes to, like, the whole money and markets and everything else that really kind of matters in these kind of conference realignment stuff, it really doesn't. And I don't think Florida's even going to want them in. It's going to be the same reason that South Carolina would want Clemson in. And so the SEC doesn't need another market in Florida. You already got Florida. The only one that might make sense is maybe Miami to get the Miami market. But they fit in institutionally better with the Big Ten academically and all that kind of stuff. And the Big Ten, I think, has been way more aggressive since the news that the SEC was adding Texas and Oklahoma. They've just been super aggressive and just adding schools, you know, USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon. I think they'd have no problems adding Florida State. Now, if the Big Ten doesn't want Florida State, then, I mean, you obviously have to go independent. And that's just as much of a death nail than staying in the ACC. Like if you think of how, and you know what, we're probably going to get into this. I don't know if we'll get into it a ton this episode, maybe next episode that we do, or maybe sometime in the off season, because Joel Klatt and Josh Pate really got into kind of more like future talking college football when it comes to playoff and alignment and how all that stuff's going to work. And even Chip Kelly had a great quote. If you haven't listened to the Chip Kelly quote, I don't know if it's pregame or postgame or whatever, that he had talking about this stuff, go listen to it, go look it up. But when you're just kind of thinking future, when it comes to playoff, when it comes to just how the playoff works, if you're Florida State, you're getting an auto bid next year.
Yeah.
You're getting an auto bid next year in the ACC. Like, you don't have this problem next year. And the year after that, at least. Now, whatever the format's going to look like after that, who knows? Who knows what the landscape of college football is going to look like in 2 years anyways? So all this could even be for naught, or all this could be, hey, we're just getting ready for whatever the next thing is. I don't know. But at least for the next 2 years, dude, you get a free bid, basically, by winning your conference next year, the next 2 years. And so in that aspect, like, a lot of this seems to have kicked off again for them because they got left out. And I totally get the frustration. You and I have talked about that ad nauseum. It's not really our place because we're not popular enough to keep ringing that bell, because what we're going to say is going to make a difference. I'm going to tell people that do have that voice and do have that audience. I would say, hey, just keep going because it's messed up. We need to get rid of the college football playoff committee and go back to the BCS poll as the format. But it just doesn't make sense if the issue is, hey, we were left out of the playoff. so we want to leave. Because even in a 12-team playoff, you lose one game still, and maybe it's to Clemson, like, you're probably you're still in.
Yeah, definitely.
Win your conference, you're in automatically. So in that aspect, it doesn't really make sense. It really kind of sounds like we just have super sour grapes. And whether that's deserving or not, you have super sour grapes and you're just kind of going scorched earth on everything. And it's probably going to cost you a lot of money. It's written in articles that Bill of Rights thing or grant of rights contract is ironclad. So who knows if you're even able to get out of it. So I don't know. I honestly think that this might even just be for clicks and headlines. I don't really know how legitimate of a case they even have. I mean, nobody's really going to know except people on the super inside that know those things, but I don't know, man. It definitely just seems like, hey, we're just upset, so we're going to do everything to kind of destroy the system. I mean, even before then, like, when it comes to their money revenue, like, if you stay in the ACC, they're obviously screwed. Like, they're going to be under $30 million every single year in revenue from SEC and Big Ten schools. $30 million a year. That's a lot of money that you're making less. And your contract is until 2036 with ESPN, with the ACC. So when it comes to a money thing, it makes sense. But again, it's a, hey, like, who's going to take you? Like, are you going to be able to get your own TV deal with a big network like Notre Dame does if you're independent? Probably not. That's why BYU isn't independent anymore.
And honestly, they probably
aren't. That's why Army isn't independent anymore, because they're joining the AAC. Yeah.
But even with Florida State going independent, they're not going to be able to schedule as well as Notre Dame has. Like, Notre Dame, I feel like they have a bunch of built-in rivals that they are able to keep on their schedule every year. Florida State's not going to have that. They're going to be able to keep Florida. And then after Florida, where are you going? Because
you got Florida, Miami, maybe schedule Clemson, maybe schedule Notre Dame.
Yeah. And but then, even that's like, what, 3 years down the road? Because pretty much every schedule right now is pretty much set in stone for the next 3 years, give or take. So after that.
Yeah, and again, just, like, if they even pull this thing off, I don't even know when it would be in effect is the other thing, too, you know? Because, I mean, scheduling would be a nightmare if it was like, hey, we're leaving starting next year. Yeah. Who freaking knows what a schedule is going to look like for them? And again, this could also just kind of come into them maybe being forward thinking of like, hey, this whole system is completely changing in 2 years. So we're just going to go ahead and get out in front and try and get out of this grant of rights deal so that we can go join whatever the thing is going to be. One of the things that Chip Kelly kind of mentioned is that, like, hey, why is Washington not playing Stanford in softball or in swimming? Oral, and they all the sports have to go with football to the Big Ten. Yep. This is the, and thank God that he said it, because, like, this is the thing that doesn't make sense when it comes to conference realignment. Notre Dame does it in football. They're ACC and everything else besides football. Football is independent. Why can't everybody else either have their football go independent or just their football go to the Big Ten? Or just their football go to the SEC or just their football go to the ACC when it comes to Cal and Stanford? Why do all of the other programs, athletic department programs, have to go to swimming, gymnastics, softball, baseball, basketball, even women's basketball? I mean, these are, and like, the only for 99.9% of schools, the only money generating sport is either football or basketball. All the other sports under that don't make money. They lose money. And so now we're going to have those sports teams and sports programs that lose money in the case of USC, UCLA, Washington, Washington, Oregon, Cal, Stanford, are all going to be having to go all the way to the other side of the country to play games now.
Losing even more money just on travel.
We're going to have to lose even more money on travel.
Yeah.
Just doesn't make sense.
No. Again, that was
this is the thing that we were upset about. This is probably the thing that we were all upset about the preseason, that we, like, now is a conversation, because it's the dead period in college football waiting for these big bowl games. But, like, it's a legit conversation, and something that, like, and this is something that Josh Pate has said, you know, people that are in these powerful positions that we think are super smart end up not being super smart at all and not being able to figure this out. Like, hey, it makes sense to do it this way. It doesn't have to be a cookie cutter. Like, you can't follow the same model of A&M going to the SEC or Missouri going to the SEC when you're Cal and you're going to the ACC. It can't be the same model. It doesn't make sense. Like, we can college go on football, probably, man, for a while.
Well, so that kind of like backtracks to one of the things that I really liked that he said, and when he was talking about how college football needs a commissioner. Like, all of these conferences have their own commissioner, but the conference commissioner is doing what's best for the conference and not for every team involved coming in. You know what I mean? So, like, if you do have a head honcho over all of college sports, then it's like, okay, really, UCLA, does it make sense for you to be sending your softball team to play Rutgers every year? No. So let's figure out a way to make that work. But, like, it's just, we're kind of at a point where there's like no rules or regulation for everything that's going on. Everybody's just like, how can we make more money? How can we get to a better position for our football team to make more waves in the sport? So, like, I really like that he, like, I feel like a lot of coaches are actually starting to bring it up and talk about how we need more rules surrounding everything, not just conference realignment, but more of transfer portal and NIL stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the sport itself, when it comes to the play on the field, has been awesome. Everything else is just in the toilet right now. Like, it's it's not good. It's not good. And again, like I said, we could go on. We could make a whole episode just on this. And you know what? We probably could have done it last week, but I'll say it. I was selfish and I wanted to break. Okay. Anyways, let's move on to the next topic that I have. Florida. Stay in the SEC now. Florida with a rough early signing day, Mason. They were projected top five with their commitments. And if I see here correctly, let me bring up the article again that I have pulled up. They lost six players who are ranked in the top 150 since November 11th. And then three other four stars before the week. So they go from being projected or being ranked top five recruiting class, and now they're outside of the top 15. This is the thing that Florida fans were like, hey, we have a really good recruiting class coming in. Like, we got to keep them. And then it falls apart on you. And it's not looking good for Billy Napier. And you know, the schedule release of the dates and everything was taken out. So even that had to be brought back up again of the brutal schedule they're going to have next year. Billy Napier getting fired mid-year next year. What's happening over in Gainesville?
So one of my favorite things that we've done throughout the year is I felt like just about every week you would ask me if Billy Napier was going to be was on the hot seat or what was happening with Billy Napier. And every time I was like, Cam, top five recruiting class right now. Just take a deep breath. They're going to let him get through this recruiting class and then they're going to see what happens. And then their season went down the drain. Now their recruiting class is going down the drain. Fortunately for my guy, Billy, it's not looking good, dude. It's not looking good. Because like this recruiting class was his saving grace. He could always fall back on it and be like, look, I got guys coming in. We're going to be fine next year. The guys aren't coming in anymore, so it's not looking good for my guy.
Yeah, I saw a line in the article from The Athletic that I was reading about it, and it's like, yeah, now it's a Dan Mullen recruiting class.
Yeah.
Dan Mullen recruiting class. Fire Dan Mullen to get this. Man.
Gosh. Yeah.
It's a rough spot for Billy.
It's not looking good for Billy.
It's like my father and all were kind of talking about this earlier today. It's like, listen, Florida just has a rough time now with coaches because they haven't been super relevant since Urban was there, which was what, like 15 years ago, something like that.
I think it was what, 08 that he left, maybe?
They even had a stretch when Spurrier left where they were in a kind of a rough spot. So, I mean, you've had two really good coaches in Spurrier and Urban. And then since then, it's been Will Muschamp. It's been, who is after him?
Apple, whatever his name was.
Jim McElwain.
That dude.
And then Dan Mullen. And now you have Billy Napier.
Yeah, not great.
I mean, you're probably going to let go of Billy Napier, whether it's fair or not, depending with how the schedule is. But he's had 3 years. Recruiting class went down the drain. The year this year was down the drain. And you're going to have to do it probably with a freshman quarterback maybe next year, unless Graham Mertz is coming back, which he might be. And their schedule is rough, man. The schedule is really rough. For those that don't know, I'm going to pull it up for you real quick. Florida football. Well, 2024. So here's the schedule for Florida next year. They open up against Miami at home, and they have Samford, A&M at Mississippi State. Then they have a bye week. This is also 2024 is also a really weird year that everybody has two bye weeks. Just with how that's, I don't like it.
It's weird. I don't like it either.
Just doesn't make sense.
They're 2-2 right now going into the bye.
2-2 going into the bye, says Mason. Then they have UCF at home. At Tennessee, Kentucky at home, then the bye week. So, you know, maybe not too bad. And then this happens. Georgia at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss at Florida State.
Their best chance is to be 3-3 going into the second bye. And I don't even know if that's going to happen.
That stretch, Mason. Georgia at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State. And Ole Miss, have you seen Ole Miss's transfer portal?
Transfer stuff? Class?
They've been getting basically everybody that's good. Okay, everybody. They're going to be stacked next year. They're making the playoff next year. I'm calling it now. They're making playoff next year.
For sure. For sure.
So Florida has Georgia, which is neutral site, Georgia neutral site, at Texas, LSU at home, Ole Miss at home, at Florida State.
They don't win a single game. 0-4 or 0-5, whatever it was through that stretch. No chance.
It'd be 0-5 down that stretch, Mason. They could potentially not win a game from October 5th on. October 5th is UCF. Then after that, they go to Tennessee. And then the next week, they play Kentucky.
All right. My guess is they fire him after...
If they get beat by Kentucky, if they just beat UCF and get beat by if the schedule works out of lose to Miami, beat Samford, lose to A&M, beat State off, beat UCF, then lose Tennessee and Kentucky, he gets fired after Kentucky.
He's done after Kentucky. I think it'll be that second bye regardless.
If he gets fired mid-year, that would be the time.
Yeah. His only hope is that the quarterback is as good as everybody says he's going
to
be.
His only hope is that they have to basically only have one loss going into the second bye week to make it to the next year.
Which isn't going to happen.
And only having one loss going into the second bye week would still, at the end of the season, them end up 6-6.
Yeah, Billy, it was fun. I had high hopes for you. Start looking for a beach house.
Man, what a rough stretch, bro. What a rough time. And then after that, man, like, who's going to be the hot name next year for you to hire? I mean, you went the year, the time before, you went established SEC coach at lower tier SEC school. Did pretty good. You know, he took them to the conference championship game, almost beat Bama. In the fake year, and then completely collapsed and didn't want to recruit after that.
Hey, he just lost his mind.
Then you went group of five guy that had been there forever and won at Louisiana with Billy Napier. So where do you go next? Like, obviously we don't know who the top names and hot names are going to be next year because it seems to always change every year. But if you're Florida, I mean, where do you go?
I bet they do something really stupid and try and hire somebody like Jimbo. Like, I think they just go for a name, honestly. Like, they failed with taking a Napier, so after that, they're just going to go for a name, 100%.
I don't know who they would go after if it's not Jimbo. And even Jimbo's a horrible idea.
Oh, 100%.
It's a horrible idea.
But that's what it's going to be. Like, it's going to be a bad idea wherever they go. It's just going to be a name. Honestly, it'll be a name.
Is Kirby going to go to the NFL?
No. Why would he go to the NFL? There's no point for him to do that.
Because the schedule. He doesn't have to be constantly working the whole time like he does in college. He's done everything in college he needs to.
I don't think he goes to the NFL.
It's the next challenge.
But
he's like Nick Saban, he is going to have the edge.
Yeah, but he also saw that Nick Saban failed in the NFL. He's going to fail.
Man.
He will fail in the NFL too. He'll do the same thing. He'll go.
The Chargers will get him.
How about this? Actually, you just convinced me. He can go to the NFL, go to the Chargers this year.
I knew this was coming. I knew this was coming.
Fail, and then come back after Nick Saban retires.
Whenever I brought this up, I exactly knew that this is where it was going to end up. I knew you were going to end up here, no matter how long it took for me to kind of keep pushing you along.
You put it in my head, so there you go. You led me there. Thank you.
No. In a legitimate sense, like, I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he does.
I don't think he's going.
With the state of how college football is, I would not be surprised if he left.
So I don't think he'll go to the NFL, but I also don't think he's going to make it another 10 years. Like, I don't think we'll see another Nick Saban type of coach ever again. Not necessarily GOAT status, but lengthwise or longevity of career. Like, I don't think that happens anymore ever again. So,
unless things drastically change with how portal recruiting, NIL, all that stuff that Chip Kelly was talking about changes and actually for the better, where coaches don't have to be constantly working, constantly worried, where they only maybe get one day a week, 1 week a year, maybe off, you know?
No.
Then maybe you're okay. Like, yeah, we'll get those types again, but yeah, how it's currently structured and how the schedule currently is, there's no way that anybody would be able to last that long for sure.
But the thing is, I just don't see, like, who's the last college coach to actually go into the NFL and be semi-successful?
Pete Carroll. Like,
yeah, that was what, 20 years ago?
He's still there.
Yeah, but still 20 years.
He left, it's been almost 20 years. But, I mean, he's the last guy to do it. Everybody's going to do it. You got to know, everybody that is that successful is going to be able to do it. Is he the kind of guy that would be able to be successful? I don't know. Part of that also depends, Mason, on situation.
Yes.
Absolutely. If Kirby goes and would go to the Chargers, that's probably the most perfect situation he could go to because he already has a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, see, I think it's that's the exact opposite, though. I think the Chargers is a hot garbage situation.
Really?
Yeah, well, okay. I don't want to dive deep into the NFL money books and everything, but they've got like half of their salary is filled into like four guys right now. And so if you're Kirby and you're going to the Chargers, yes, you have Justin Herbert, but you also have to find a way to basically rebuild the entire team. So like, I just don't think that he's going to be willing to go to a situation like that if he does go to the NFL.
He would love that. So I think he would love the opportunity to completely rebuild from scratch.
Well, so I think if he does go somewhere, I think it would be the Falcons. Like, I think he would do something exactly opposite of that and go to the Falcons, where you have a better established team and you're just trying to find the quarterback.
That's the problem, though, Mason. That's the problem
it's a
in the
problem
NFL.
Anywhere.
It's not a problem at the Chargers, though. The Chargers,
okay, but the
have
rest of their team
guy.
Sucks.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can have a Bengals situation where Joe and a wide receiver with Jamar will carry the team to the playoffs. That's what would happen.
They
you
haven't
go
won
to
anything.
Atlanta. You go to Atlanta, yeah, you know, it's the worst division in football, but they don't have a quarterback. And what quarterback are they going to be able to draft without having to give up tons of assets to move up to get one?
I wish I knew where they were picking the draft so I could answer that question for you. But
I think they're outside the top 10.
Oh, well, next year, 2 years from now.
I mean, again, it's hey, I'm a big believer in Jaden Daniels, and maybe they trade up to get Jaden, depending on where the offseason and combine and draft stuff happens, on what's going to happen with him. Maybe you trade him and get him. He's but even outside five. Of that, he's probably is going to go top five with how everything's going now, with him rising a lot.
Michael Penix, maybe. I don't know where he's going to get drafted.
Like, this is the thing with rookie quarterbacks and why 90% of these quarterbacks that are drafted in the first round don't amount to anything, is that it's basically a shot in the dark.
Yeah, 100%.
How often are you getting a Joe Burrow? How often are you getting a Justin Herbert? How often are you getting a Peyton Manning? Like, these guys and quarterbacks that are face of the franchise guys, and how many times is it going to be your job? So okay. If I'm Kirby, I'm going to the place. I don't care what the rest of the situation is. I have a quarterback who just signed his new deal and extension. He's staying there. Nothing's happening to him. That's where I'm going.
Okay, let me ask you this. What has Justin Herbert done in his career that makes you think he's any good? He is a 500 for lifer. He hasn't even sniffed the playoffs. Well, they were in the playoffs last year, but they gave up a 28-0 lead. Justin Herbert is just he's a good name. He's not winning you anything. That's basically it. You want to know why? Because the rest of their team sucks. Their whole team is hot garbage. So
out of the possible situations, Mason, now that we're in the NFL right now, Mason, we're going all in the NFL. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to the NFL real quick. And this is a first, really, for Down to the Wire. So you're welcome, audience.
Okay.
Coaching changes real quick. NFL coaching changes. So right now, the NFL openings that are right now, Raiders, Panthers, Chargers. Ones that could be open for debate. I think basically every coach in the NFC South needs to be fired. Maybe yes. Todd Bowles maybe could stay. I don't know. I'm not really deep into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and what they think, but the Saints hate their coach. I do too, because I'm a Saints fan, and the Falcons hate their coach. So, like, at least 2/3 of the NFC South should be without their coaches. Will they get fired? Who freaking knows? But the ones for sure are the Panthers, the Raiders, and the Chargers. And if you want to add in other teams that you suspect will get rid of their coach on Black Monday or whatever it's called in the NFL, go ahead and add that team in. And we're just going to talk Kirby here, because I think that's the most fun conversation. We can talk about Harbaugh if we wanted to, because he always flirts. Where do you go?
I am going to a job.
You already said Atlanta, but
okay, I'm changing completely. I've pivoted 100%.
Okay.
This job hasn't opened up yet, but I'm about 95% sure it's going to open up by the end of the year. They just traded away the number one pick last year, got an insane haul for it. They already have a good defense. They already have a really good wide receiver in DJ Moore. Their offensive line can use some work. And you currently have Justin Fields. So I would go to the Bears if I'm him. But the reason behind that is because they are about to land the number one pick again. So you can either decide, do we want to trade the number one pick again and move back and get another butt ton of assets? Or do we just want to wash it, start off clean with Caleb Williams, trade Justin Fields, get some more assets for Justin Fields, and continue to rebuild? The Bears have a solid defense. They're okay on the offensive line. They do need some work on that, but they do have DJ Moore on the outside. They do have Darnell Mooney. They do have Cole Kmet. So they have some passable weapons, but you do have Justin Fields. So do you want to work with Justin Fields again if you're Kirby Smart? Sure. So let's build off that. Let's trade the number one pick. Get more assets. You don't want to work with Justin Fields? Boom. Caleb Williams right in your lap. Give me the Bears. 100%.
Well, Caleb Williams is going to be a bust. So I've been calling it since the beginning of the year, Mason. Everybody can go back and listen to it.
Okay.
He's going to be a bust.
What do you mean by bust?
He's not going to be able to do jack, and he's going to get replaced by the draft.
Okay. All right, well, I'll let you have that one. I don't agree.
He's going to be a worse Kyler Murray is what he's going to be. Kyler Murray's okay. He's decent. He's on a horrible Arizona situation, but he's still not very good, okay? And he's going to be worse than Kyler Murray.
I'm going to the Bears if I'm him. If that happens.
So Bears, Falcons were your two. Do you have a third?
Then I would go Chargers.
Rank them. So Bears 1, Falcons 2, Chargers 3?
Yeah. Yep.
What's the worst situation? Panthers? By far? They have no draft assets.
I would say either the Panthers
or... They don't have a first this year. They have no offensive weapons. Their owner is awful.
Yeah, but you still have Bryce Young.
Bryce, so I would say... You don't even know anything about Bryce Young. Like, to be fair to Bryce, he doesn't have any weapons.
Yeah, okay.
But you, like, to be fair to him, he doesn't have weapons.
Or an offensive line.
Like, I just... He has nothing. It's basically just him. He has
nothing. Yes. Okay.
Who came into a worse situation, Mason? Bryce Young or Joe Burrow?
Bryce Young.
Joe went into a pretty bad situation over in... The good thing for Bryce is that he hasn't destroyed his AC. His offensive line didn't destroy his knee.
That's the thing. You can't, like, it's hard to argue that because Joe Burrow didn't make it past like two games. So can't go too far.
He's still fighting for his life with that offensive line. So,
and still getting hurt. Why is Joe Burrow not injury prone, but Tua is? I'll never know.
You do know. Anyways, let's move on from the NFL, Mason. We had a good run for our fans out there talking NFL. Maybe we'll get into a little NFL after the college football season. Let's get into the college football playoff. That's one of the things that we were going to do big time. But before we get into kind of breakdowns of things to watch, let's take a trip back on memory lane, Mason, and let's go back to what our preseason predictions were for the college football playoff. We'll start with mine. So my prediction to start the season for the playoff was going to be Michigan, Texas, LSU, and Oregon. So I got 2 out of 4, the wrong Pac-12 champion, the wrong SEC champion made it in. So you know what? I did okay. I did all right. Mason, on the other hand here, Michigan, Texas, Bama, Clemson. You got 3 out of 4. Very impressive. You went with Clemson. They just went 8-4. You know,
I feel like having Clemson in there completely washes out the fact that I got 3 of 4, right?
it's up there. It's up there. So yeah, that was we did pretty good. I mean, both of us were on Michigan and Texas. We obviously differed on the SEC champ there. If you wanted to hear the hot take of all hot takes, go back and listen to me talk about Georgia in the preseason, and you'll probably get a great laugh at me on that. But yeah, those are our predictions. Basically, we did pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure I had Bama and Michigan in the championship. That obviously can't happen. But you, my good sir, Michigan, Texas. I had
Michigan and Texas in my champions.
It is alive.
So it's alive.
It is alive.
I might not have gotten the as many teams in as you did or right there, Mason, but I could have my championship champion correct. So
yeah,
we'll see how it goes. So let's go ahead and get into the breakdown, Mason. Let's start off with the first game in the playoff, Bama, Michigan, the 1-4 matchup over in the Rose Bowl, which is pretty cool. So really kind of our breakdown here is really going to be kind of questions that we're asking. We're not really going to dive into the stats. We talked about enough stats when it came to the blind resumes and all that kind of good stuff. That's not really our forte. That's not really the big thing that we do. So we're just going to, you know, ask some questions and things to kind of watch out for during the game for our breakdown. So the first thing, we'll kind of go back and forth here. The first thing for me is, which Bama is going to show up? Is it going to be the Bama that played Texas early in the year? Is it going to be the Bama that played Auburn? Or is it going to be the Bama that played Georgia or played LSU or had one of their higher up games? It's been a really kind of inconsistent team. They won all their games except Texas. So they won all their conference games, had the one slip up. They have improved. They played really well. They've kind of figured things out on offense and how to use Milroe and all that kind of stuff, which has been really cool to watch. But again, it's still kind of an inconsistent group. They're not going to be playing at home. You're going to be going all the way out west for the first time since 2009, 2008, whatever the year was that you guys played Texas in the Rose Bowl. So that's really kind of a big question. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, honestly, like, it all comes down to who's showing up. Like, are we getting fourth quarter against Texas? Are we getting South Florida? Like, who's coming? I do think that Alabama has a great chance of winning this game. But there is the little tiny bit of fear in the back of my head of they haven't necessarily played super great in the first half of games. They've been a second half team the entire time this year. The turnovers scare me with Milrow. I think he cleans it up, but there's a lot in this game that does make me nervous. But at the same time, like, I do think Bama's going to be able to bully Michigan majority of the game. That's the big thing for Michigan, is that they try and come out and they try and bully these teams. They try and run over them. They try and do X, Y, Z to get the other team off their game. And I don't necessarily think they're going to be able to do that against Alabama. You're going to have to see a different Michigan team in my eyes, because I don't think they're going to be able to run on Alabama like they have been everybody else in this entire season. So you're going to have to find other guys that are going to be able to make plays for Michigan for them to actually have a chance to win.
Okay. What's a question you got?
All right. So I should have just led into it with my last statement. That would have been perfect. But my question is, what aspect of the game do you think is most important for both teams? And I'll give you mine real quick. To me, for Alabama, it's winning first down on both sides of the ball, especially on defense, because if you can get Michigan in second and long situations, you're looking at like second and 11, second and 12, second and 9, whatever. Like, whatever you can keep them in, to where you're having to count on J.J. McCarthy beating you in the air, I think you're going to be in a great situation looking at that, because Michigan is going to try and run the ball. If you can stop them on first down and have J.J. McCarthy be the guy who's got to keep the drive going for them, I think you're going to be set up very, very well if you're Alabama. And on the other side for Michigan, I think the big thing for them is, can their wide receivers show up? Because I've already said this, like, I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball in Alabama. So looking at it, you're going to have to look on the guys on the outside for Michigan. Can they win their one-on-one matchups against Alabama's corners? I don't think they're going to be able to. I think Alabama's corners are going to be able to shut them down. But if you're Michigan, you want a chance to win this game, McCarthy and the wide receivers have to be on a different level than they have been all season. So they're going to have to come out and they're going to have to play really well to keep Michigan in the game.
Yeah, that really kind of leads into that kind of question, is going to bring me to two of the questions that I had, was on Bama being on defense, Michigan on offense. Is Bama going to be able to hold up against the run? They gave up a lot of rushing yards against Auburn. They weren't super stout against Texas. So there is room there for teams to run on Bama. Is Michigan going to be able to do that? Will Bama be able to hold up against the run? If they can't, it's going to be a long night. You're not going to win if you can't stop the run. If you are, then it's going to be back to Michigan. Now, on Michigan and Bama being on offense and Michigan being on defense, is Michigan going to be able to contain Milrow? They really haven't played a guy like that in the Big Ten, so it is going to be kind of interesting. The thing with Michigan is, hey, we've played better wide receiver groups. We played better wide receivers. Even the last, like, two games ago we did. So that's not really, when it comes to just covering straight routes, they won't really have the issues with that. They're going to have issues of whenever a Milrow breaks contain, are you going to be able to contain him in the pocket? Are you going to be able to contain just the regular quarterback run game? Are you going to be able to hold up against that? Because Milrow is going to be the X factor on offense for Bama. And if Michigan can contain Milrow, then it's doesn't matter what they do on offense, it's lights out for Bama, because there have been so many times, so many stretches over the year for Bama that whenever Milrow is contained and can't find his receivers and can't make the big wow play, they sputter. So that's going to be a big thing for them. If it gets to a shootout, for me, a question. If it gets to a shootout, can the Michigan offense keep up? We know Bama can score. We've seen it. And kind of consistently against some good defenses, Georgia this past time. There hasn't been a lot of really shootout situations that Michigan's offense has needed to, and that's really kind of by design with how they play the game. They play a really good style of football, complementary style there on offense and defense. But if it gets to a shootout, like the TCU game last year in the playoff game, are they going to be able to keep up? What's J.J. McCarthy going to be able to do? And like you said, the wide receivers are going to be big. What do you think on the whole situation?
My dogs are going crazy. So in my mind right now, I think Alabama's DBs are going to be able to match up one-on-one with Michigan's wide receivers very well. You've got two guys right now who are very high projected draft picks in Kool-Aid and Terrion Arnold. So I think Alabama's going to be able to stack the box against Michigan. So that's why, in my eyes, like, Michigan's wide receivers are going to be the biggest X factor for them in this game. Because if Michigan wants to have a chance to win, they're going to have to win those one-on-one matchups. Because I do think Alabama's going to stack the box. And if they're able to have success in their one-on-one routes, then yeah, Michigan's going to be able to stay in the game. But like you said, it is going to... There is a little bit of a thought in the back of your head, like, they weren't able to keep up with TCU last year in a close game. Like, that game was, what, 50 to 40 something? Like, when you have a guy like J.J. McCarthy, he feels very off-brand game manager in a sense where, like, he manages the game based on how well their running game is going. And so I think for him to be in a high pressure situation, he's really going to have to rely on those wide receivers. And I just I don't know if they're going to be able to have a lot of success on the outside. So.
All right. What you got? What else you got?
Okay. To me right now with Milroe, it's all about the turnovers. So what do you think is the biggest aspect for Alabama to be able to keep themselves in a positive turnover game? What I mean by that is obviously beating Michigan in the turnover battle and not losing that, because I think if you do lose the turnover battle, then it starts to get a little shaky. So what are your thoughts on Milroe lessening his turnovers and being able to prevent the big game-changing turnovers that he has had so far this season?
Here's the thing with Milroe is that there is always one to two passes a game where you say, what the heck is he doing? Every game. Now, whether those teams that he's playing are able to take advantage of that or not, it remains to be seen. I mean, LSU had two of them.
So did Georgia.
Georgia had two of them. I mean, yeah. It's every single game. And so, like, I don't know. Like, maybe, like, during the time off and being able to practice could fix it, but sometimes you kind of are what you are. And sometimes it doesn't even have to do anything with situation. Like, a lot of times you're like, hey, just stay out of third and long. Just make sure you're on schedule and all this stuff. For him, like, it just doesn't seem to matter. Like, it's in all situations he does this. So he just has, what for whatever reason, just makes just, I mean, he might play great the rest of the game. It might be on fire like he was against LSU, but he'll have one to two throws every single game where Michigan or whoever they're playing is going to have a chance to take it. And so you're just going to kind of have to live with it. And on the Bama side, hey, you have to have in the back of your mind that, hey, we're probably going to give up one. We'll probably give up one. So let's try and get two. Like, let's try and get it. And this is kind of the conversation you were having with J.J. McCarthy. He's not the game-breaking changer guy. Like, he's the, I'm going to manage the game. Sometimes I'll make the throws that need to be made. He's not a bad quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He's definitely a system guy. He gets the ball where it needs to go. He made a couple of plays against Ohio State, but he's definitely not the, I'm going to change the complete game based on my abilities type thing. So for you, I mean, you're able to lock up these wide receivers, make them make a mistake, get pressure on them, Dallas Turner, strip sack or whatever. That's what it's really going to have to be for Bama. Cause again, like I would be shocked, honestly, if there's not a single turnover for Bama. So it's going to be, hey, we just need to get one or two more. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think the big thing is going to be the edge rushers for Bama too, with Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell, because Michigan's offensive line is a little banged up. So if they're able to get that pressure, but that just comes back to winning first down, in my opinion. Like, if you can keep them in second and long and then really unleash the pass rush, then you're going to be able to get J.J. McCarthy off rhythm, and then he is going to have a couple turnovers. But yeah, I agree with you on the whole Milroe thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the conversation this game, and this is going to kind of, I guess, be my next point, is there's been a lot of conversation about, or maybe, I don't know if it's much of a conversation or as much of it's an assumption by people of like, oh, Bama's going to score, can Michigan score? is really kind of the question. To me, it's, hey, Bama's been playing great on offense, but are we 100% positive that they're going to be able to score? This is one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country, better than Georgia. And part of that could be, hey, like they don't play anybody. Their statistics are overblown or whatever. They played, did a pretty good job against two first round wide receivers against Ohio State. So that, to me, it's the question of, like, everybody wants to talk about the Michigan offense against the Bama defense and all this stuff. And you know what? That's a fun conversation to have. We can have that. We've been having that. But to me, it's the, can, is Bama's inconsistent offense good enough to consistently score against the Michigan defense? That's going to be, to me, that's more the matchup to watch, more so than the other. A lot of people are probably going to be like, hey, we need to really watch out for the Michigan offense against the Bama defense, with in the back of their mind, assuming Bama's just going to score the whole time. And maybe that could be the case, but the key is, can Bama score? Can Bama not turn over the ball like we were just talking about? Because if they can't, then it doesn't really matter on the other side. You know what I mean? So, like, Michigan plays the brand of football of, hey, you can't score. They are just going to pound you and pound you and pound you until you break. That's the brand of football they play. And they're comfortable playing that game. They're comfortable it going into the fourth quarter 6-3.
Yeah.
Is Bama comfortable doing that?
No.
I don't know. Probably not.
The team might be comfortable doing it.
That's when you get antsy. That's when you get antsy Milroe.
Yeah.
Is maybe in those kind of situations. But do I need to check up on you if that's the case?
No. Don't text me, please. I'm begging you. My phone will probably be turned off.
Oh, it absolutely will be. It absolutely will be. Any other notes or things you want to talk about the Bama-Michigan game? No? Okay. So then let's move on to the next one. Texas and Washington primetime. I think this is going to be one heck of a game. This is going to be a shootout, Mason. I can't
wait. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be so fun. Question number one for me, which defense is going to be able to get a couple stops? That's really the main question of the whole game. Which defense is going to be able to get some stops? What do you think?
Neither. I don't think either defense is getting a stop. So it's going to be which offense doesn't have a turnover, basically. I think the thing is, it's like in this game, you've got basically good on bad, good on bad. You have, look, Texas's defense isn't a pushover. But that's because the middle, the middle of their defense is good. You're not going to be able to run on them if you're Washington. But luckily for Washington, the best part of their entire team is Michael Penix and their wide receivers. And the worst part of Texas's team, their DBs. Hot garbage. They can't stop a pass play to save their lives. So I think the big thing for Washington in this game is just don't try and run through a brick wall. Just throw the ball over the brick wall and you'll be fine. But on the other side, you got to be able to stop Quinn Ewers and Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell. And it's just going to be, to me, it's just going to be fireworks going off both sides. And like you said, this game is going to be incredible. I cannot wait to watch it. But to me, it's just who turns the ball over first. And whoever does, probably going to lose.
What's Quinn Ewers is going to show up, man? Is he going to be able to be on target and consistent? That's been the thing about Quinn Ewers for the past 2 years, is very inconsistent. He'd have a game week before Bama where he just can't hit the deep play, and then he plays Bama and seems to be able to hit the deep ball. Still, even in that game, he was still pretty inconsistent, though, so it wasn't his best version. He was on freaking fire in the Big 12 championship.
Oh, yes.
The best we've seen Texas the past decade was in that Big 12 championship game. Is that going to be the Quinn Ewers in the offense that shows up? Are we going to get Quinn Ewers from the week before against TCU or against name a team that he played? You know, that was, I mean, you'd see it on film, just not always consistent, not always on target on his throws, especially the deep throws. Which one's going to show up? Because if it's the latter and he's not consistent and he's not on target, he's not sharp, then Washington could run away with it. But if he is, if he's that guy from Big 12 championship game, then, oh boy, we got a fun one.
Yeah. All right, big thing for me, this isn't necessarily a question, it's more of a point. It's, can Texas win the possession battle against Washington and slow the game down? I think if you're Texas, yes, you can win a shootout with Washington. You've been able to win shootouts the entire season. But can you really slow the game down and win the running game? So that way you can win the possession battle. You really got to look at time of possession in this game. If you're Texas, you have to be able to establish yourself on the ground early in the game. So that way Washington has it in the back of their head that they still need to be watching for it the entire game. If you're Texas and you come out throwing the ball, maybe Washington changes up their defense a little bit and is able to kind of sit back and honestly kind of sit on some of the routes. But if you start off the game early, running the ball, establishing it, you're going to be able to contain the clock and keep the ball out of Washington's hands. And I think if you can do that, you're setting yourself up really well if you're Texas.
For me, is Washington going to be able to run the ball to stay balanced? And not so much when I say balance, I don't really mean 50-50. I mean, a lot of times when people say balance on TV and all that kind of stuff, I think a lot of the audience and a lot of viewers think, oh, they need to be 50-50 to stay balanced. It's not really so much of that as it is, hey, there's at least a threat that Texas has to think about where they can't just drop 8 or 9 and just have their ears pinned back. Because whenever they have you, I mean, just look at the Bama game. They were able to stop the Bama run game, and they were just able to pin ears back, have a spy on, and just go after Milroe. And we obviously know how that turned out. But if you have at least the threat that, hey, they could pop off 5 yards right here. Oh, hey, they could pop off a big run right here. Then when it comes to you scoring and being able to even yourself be able to keep the clock and have that running, because they played a little bit of possession ball against Oregon the last game, which probably surprised a lot of people. But if they're able to do that, you're in a good spot too. So it's kind of the counter or the opposite side of what you were kind of saying. And again, it isn't 50-50, maybe probably not even run as much as you did against Oregon, but at least have that threat, at least have that option that you can go to get you out of a second and long, and get you back to a third medium, those kind of situations there for Washington.
Well, I think the thing with Washington is I think you're going to see a lot of the new age running game. And what I mean by that is like the quick swing passes, the shovel passes in front of the quarterback, screen games, quick slants, like anything like that. That's just a quick and easy hit and run as a quarterback. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of that out of Washington because honestly, like this Texas running game is insane, running defense is insane. So Washington's not going to be able to have a lot of success. So you still have to find a way to run the ball in a sense. Big quotation marks out of that, because if you can keep it like quick swing passes, everything like that, like you're still going to be in a situation where you're able to run the clock down while also not just ramming your head against a brick wall. So I think you do see a lot of that, maybe probably early out of Washington, just to kind of keep Texas on their toes. But honestly, dude, I don't see a world where Washington gets over 20 runs.
Outside of quarterback scrambles, maybe.
Yes, take that. Completely wipe that off the map. They don't get over 20 carries in this game.
Yeah, I mean, defensively for Washington, can they stop the run? You can stop the run against Texas, you win the game.
Yep.
Cut and dry. Steve Sarkisian has always liked to run the ball, especially while he's at Texas. Likes to play action pass. Likes to run everything off of that. If you stop the run, if you're Washington, you win. It's as simple as that. Now, will they be able to do it? That's the other question.
Probably not. Man, but this game, dude, it's just going to be so much fun. Like, if you just think about quarterback wide receiver matchups, like Michael Penix, Rome Odunze, McMillan, and then on the other side, it's Ewers and Worthy and Mitchell. It's just like, dude, this game's going to be insane. I think they did a really good job of putting this game as the second game and letting Alabama and Michigan butt heads in the first game.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely agree with that. Okay, so let's move on to the picks, Mason. We're doing picks for the New Year's Six bowl games along with the LSU game, obviously. So let's go ahead and get into it. We're obviously doing it in chronological order. So Missouri, Ohio State. Ohio State, not really many opt-outs here in this game. Kyle McCord is out. Kyle McCord is really kind of the big one that's out for Ohio State, so they're going with a backup quarterback, obviously, because of that. Ohio State is still, with that, still a 3-point favorite against Missouri. So, what's the pick?
Kyle McCord out of the game. There hasn't been a word yet on Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't think he's going to play Missouri. They pretty much got their entire squad playing. So I'm actually going to go with Missouri making a statement win against Ohio State. So, yeah, give me the Tigers.
I'm there with you, man. I am going to go with Missouri as well. And here's kind of my thinking on the whole quarterback situation. You know, Kyle McCord wasn't great, but he had to have been better than what they've had.
Yeah.
So what they have is worse than Kyle McCord, which would make sense because why would the coach play the worst guy? Even if Marvin Harrison Jr. is playing, I would still pick Missouri. So I'm going Missouri, not just to cover, to outright win and beat Ohio State in that one. Next one, Ole Miss against Penn State. Not really many opt-outs in this one either. Penn State is a 4.5-point favorite in this one. Do you like the old Lane train or you like the Nittany Lions here?
There is no chance that Penn State's offense is keeping up with Ole Miss's offense. I don't understand why Penn State is favored in this game. Give me Ole Miss, and I'm taking Ole Miss big too.
Yeah, I guess maybe the line is like, hey, Penn State's defense will be able to stop them, and then Ole Miss's defense is also really bad. So maybe that's kind of the thinking. I'm going to go Ole Miss too. I don't know if they'll win big. I think they at least cover. I don't know if I'm going to go outright win here, but I will go Ole Miss. Next one. And this game just needs to be canceled. Okay. It just needs, like, Florida State just needs to opt out completely of the bowl game because basically all their players have. Georgia against Florida State. Georgia is a 19-point favorite. And let me just go ahead and read you off the list of players for Florida State that have opted out or transferred. Tate Rodemaker, the quarterback that was going to play, he is transferring, so he's gone. Trey Benson, leading rusher, out. Keon Coleman, leading receiver, out. Johnny Wilson, secondary wide receiver, out. Jaheim Bell, starting tight end, out. Jared Verse, their star edge rusher, out. Fabian Levitt, their great defensive lineman, out. Could be more by the time the game comes around. Why are we playing this game? Why is Florida State just like not gotten out? And here, I'm just going to go ahead and say this now because everybody knows it's going to happen. Is that Georgia's going to go in and they're going to wipe the floor, and then people are going to go on social media and going to say, see, this just further proves that Florida State should have been in. And then I'm going to come on here and be like, hey, idiot, Florida State didn't have their actual team on the field. Do you think they're actually playing for after they get snubbed? I mean, this is what always is going to happen with these kind of teams that are left out is, oh, they lost. Like, do you really expect these players? These star players that are going to be first-round draft picks to play in a meaningless bowl game. Like, let's just be honest. It's an exhibition that doesn't actually matter, okay? They could lose by 50 points, and it's not going to change anything. But you know the comments are going to come. I'm just going to go ahead and pick Georgia. I'll pick before you. I'm picking Georgia to cover the 19 because Florida State isn't going to have a soul playing in this game.
What's funny is I thought you were going to go the exact opposite route with that because I 100% see Georgia wiping the floor with Florida State and then Kirby Smart going to the podium being like, should have been in. Do you see this? We're the best team ever. Put us in the playoffs. What are you doing? Because you know that's happening too. So it'll probably happen on both sides. But I'm with you. Give me Georgia. I don't think Florida State even sniffs the end zone in this game. So, yeah.
You know what? I think it would be great if they, on game day, just didn't show up. They went to all the things, all the gatherings, all the pregame stuff, all the news press conferences, yeah. Did like the fun bowl activities. And then when it came game time, they just packed up and went home.
Fantastic. That would be awesome.
How hilarious would that be? Oh, that'd listen, be awesome. If you're in any kind of decision-making position at Florida State, make that happen, okay? let's go on to the ReliaQuest Bowl, Mason. And this is just, you know what? Let me just say this. We missed the perfect opportunity as a college football society in not putting LSU Iowa in the bowl game.
Oh, God. Each other. I'm glad.
That would have been the matchup of all matchups. It would have been the best offense in the nation against the worst, against the best defense in the nation, along with the worst offense in the nation against the worst defense in the nation. It would have been the perfect matchup, Mason. But no, instead, we get Wisconsin. Wisconsin. I mean, eh.
Cam.
So LSU's a 10-point favorite. So I'll let you. Jaden Daniels isn't playing. Garrett Nussmeier starting.
I thought we were going to actually make it through one episode not talking about Iowa.
You're welcome.
I just give me LSU. All right. Just give me LSU. Can we move on? Thank you.
I'm going to LSU as well, obviously. LSU covering the 10.
Gosh. Freaking Iowa.
You can't sit here and tell me that wouldn't have been the perfect bowl matchup. You can't sit here and tell me that, because it would have been. It would have been, will LSU actually get a stop on defense, or will Iowa actually score a touchdown? It would be the most entertaining game ever. What do you mean? Come on.
Because they wouldn't score a touchdown, Cam. They wouldn't even make it to 15 points. You're sitting there saying that, and you know what's going to happen. Iowa would not score.
Would have been perfect. You don't know this LSU defense, Mason, okay? They gave up like 100 points to Ole Miss, okay?
Has the defensive coordinator got fired yet?
He hasn't been fired yet, but we lost our offensive coordinator to Notre Dame. Guess that makes sense. But, you know, that's a story for next week.
Galaxy brain moves right there. Maybe he knows something we don't know.
Liberty facing Oregon. So far, Bo Nix seems to be playing, but Bucky Irving isn't playing. Their running back and their center isn't playing, I don't think, either. He also opted out for Oregon. Oregon is 16.5. So how much are they going to win by?
Probably about 30. Yeah, I don't think Liberty has a chance. I you know what? I'll say this. I bet you first quarter is
the only way they had a chance is if Bo Nix decided to opt out.
Yes, I think first quarter it'll be close, and then after that, Oregon blasts the doors off of them.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you there. I'm going to go Oregon as well. I usually don't like these high spread games. I picked two of them, Mason. I picked two of the high spreads here. Okay, 19 and 16.5. Picked both of them. It feels gross. So let's go ahead and go to the playoff games, Mason. And we're going to go ahead and pick these games. And then based off of those picks, we'll give straight up picks because obviously we are spreading. So we'll do the spread pick that we normally do. We'll do straight up picks. And then we'll also go ahead and pick the champion based off of the previous pick we have. It'll make sense if you don't understand it. We'll get there. So first, we're going to go Alabama and Michigan. Michigan's actually 1.5-point favorite. Still, they've been favorites the whole time since the matchup was created. They're a 1.5-point favorite against Bama in the Rose Bowl. Mason, I know you're picking Bama. So give me the reason why you're picking Bama.
So throughout my entire breakdown that we did earlier, the main thing to me was I think Alabama's going to be able to stop the run game for Michigan. And I also think Alabama's DBs are going to be able to shut down Michigan's wide receivers. I don't think Michigan is going to be able to bully ball Alabama at all. And I do think Milroe is going to be able to get some type of flow on the offensive end and be able to actually put up points. I know Michigan does have a good defense, but like you were saying earlier, they haven't seen anything like Milroe. And so I do think that this game probably is close going into halftime. And I think Alabama coming out of half is going to be able to kind of put their foot on the gas and kind of just honestly put up a – I don't even know where to go, but I do think that they're going to be able to put up big numbers on Michigan in the second half after probably a close scoring game in the first half. So I'm going Alabama to win this, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. But also nervous at the same time.
Good about it. Okay.
You see my dilemma? I'm nervous, but I feel good about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just overconfident.
You should be nervous feeling that good about it. I'm going Michigan. They're my pick preseason to win it all. I think they're the best team in the country. I think their defense is being completely overlooked by almost everybody. I mean, this is the best defense statistically in college football. Yeah, they haven't faced a guy like Milroe, but I think they're going to be able to contain with as much time as they had. I think they are just going to be able to make the game theirs. They're going to be able to play the game that they want to play. And they're going to be able to shut down. They won't be able to completely shut down the Bama offense. Bama is still going to score points. But it's going to be the Michigan brand of football. They're not going to make let the game get into a racetrack type of feel. I think also it helps that obviously this is an Alabama home game. They're not in Tuscaloosa. Bama in the past 3-4 years has struggled away from home. So I'm going to go to Michigan. I'm going Michigan to win, Michigan to cover, and they're going to go in the national championship game. So let's go on to the fun one, Mason. This one's going to be the fireworks, the electrifying thing that everybody's going to be talking about the next day going into the national championship game. Texas against Washington. Texas is a 4-point favorite heading into this one. What you got?
So I feel like everybody is on Texas right now, and rightfully so. Texas has been hot. They're playing well. So I'm actually going to zag on this one, and I'm actually going with Washington in this game. I think Washington's ability to pass the ball on a weaker secondary like Texas is going to be able to be the bigger impact point for the game for either team. So I think Washington comes out. I think they just throw like crazy on Texas. And I think they come out, and I actually do think they'll win this game. They have been battle tested. They've played, honestly, their schedule team for team is probably better than Texas's. You played Oregon twice. You had Arizona. You had Oregon State. You had, I'm missing somebody else, whatever. But I do think Washington is battle tested, not unlike Texas, but I do think Washington is more battle tested than what the outside world is trying to say about them, that their schedule was weaker, whatever. I think Washington's going to come out. I think they're going to put on a show. So give me Washington.
What a pick. Look at you going with Washington here. Typically it's me kind of going against the grain here, as I did last with the Pac-12 championship game, going Washington, not only to cover, but to win. I think this is where it runs out for Washington though. I'll go on Texas again, had them preseason in my championship game. I just think their defense is better. Yes, their pass defense isn't great. Okay. But they're going to be able to stop the run and make it a pass rushing game against Penix. And that's what's going to be the difference, is that their pass rushers are going to be able to get home. They're going to be able to get in his face. And they're just more balanced on the offensive side of the ball than what Washington is. Washington could have had a harder schedule. They did probably play in a tougher conference this year. But it wasn't like that they completely cakewalked through it. It wasn't like Texas completely cakewalked through it. Both teams have been battle tested. Both teams have played in close games. Even against teams that they shouldn't have played close games in. I just think Texas top to bottom is a better team. And so I'm going to go with Texas not only to win, but also to cover the 4 in a electrifying game that I really cannot wait to watch. So my championship is Michigan, Texas. Your championship is Alabama, Washington. Tell me why Bama's beating Washington, Mason.
Oh, Cameron, it's been a long year for sure. But this Alabama team that we're watching right now is not the same team that we saw against Texas, not the same team that we saw against South Florida, not the same team we saw in the first half against Ole Miss. This team is built different at this point of the season. They actually are completely confident in every single aspect of the game. They have full confidence in Milroe right now. They have a lot of confidence now in their offensive line. Same thing with their secondary, their run game, like, every aspect of this team is built to come in and win a championship this year. And I do think they're going to be able to slow down Michael Penix in their passing game, because they do have a really good secondary. And also the pass rush that Alabama has right now is on a different level. They've been able to get to just basically every single quarterback that they can get their hands on. So I do think that the defense that Alabama has is going to be unlike anything that Washington has seen all year. So I think Alabama comes out, and I think they do beat Washington.
All right, what a surprise. Mason going Alabama to win it all.
Yes.
So my championship is obviously Michigan, Texas, as I predicted to begin with. I'm going to stay with my prediction from the preseason, going to Michigan. And here's why. I think a Michigan-Texas matchup is the same matchup as they had with Ohio State and would end the same way. It's a perfect matchup for Texas. The Bama-Michigan matchup is a worse matchup for Michigan than the Texas draw. And so if they're able to get past Bama, they're going to beat Texas. And here's why. Texas doesn't have the mobile quarterback like Bama does. They're going to be able to blitz and get after Ewers. They're going to be able to stop their run game. The interesting, the fun thing that's going to be to watch, though, is obviously the Texas run defense against the Michigan run offense. It would be really entertaining to see. But Michigan's going to be able to pass the ball in Texas if they aren't able to run. So Michigan just overall is a better team than Texas. And so I would go Michigan to win it all, Big Blue, and then Harbaugh is going to bolt to the NFL. Perfect ending.
All right, so if this wasn't your preseason pick, is it still the same for you right now?
It's still the same.
Okay.
I like Michigan, and I like Texas.
I think that's the exciting thing about this playoff.
I wouldn't be surprised with either one.
I was about to say.
I think that's what you're about to get to, is that I wouldn't be surprised if any team won.
Any four teams, you could tell me they win, and I'm like, yeah, cool, I get it. But I feel like that doesn't normally happen.
I think the one team that we both would probably be the most surprised if they went out and won it all would be Washington.
Yeah.
They're probably the biggest underdog, but even still it'd be like, oh, okay. Like they won. I mean, kind of makes sense. I mean, they have Michael Penix and they have Roma Dunze and McMillan and all that. And their defense is opportunistic and all this kind of stuff. So it wouldn't be, it would be the most surprising out of the other three. But Bama wins. Wouldn't be surprised. It's freaking Nick Saban and it's Alabama and it just seems to happen all the time. Texas winning would be, I think, really good for this. Texas and Michigan winning, I think, would be really good for the sport because of regionality and all that kind of stuff. Wouldn't be surprised with either of them. I think what would be fun, also another, a fun matchup would be a rematch Texas-Alabama. I think
that would be fun.
I think that would be a fun matchup, but I do see Michigan winning. So,
all right, well. Not shocking, but
do I need to check on you? The day before, see how you're doing, if you're still alive, or let me actually reframe the question: are you actually going to come over and watch the NFL games like you've been invited to? Putting you on the spot.
That's a great question, now. Cam. So I'm the type of guy that doesn't plan ahead anything. So you know what? If you make me a cheeseburger, I'll come.
Deal.
Okay.
All right, guys, that is it for us. We're gonna record again the week before the national championship game, so we'll record that on Tuesday, so we'll get a big preview on national championship game, reaction to all the New York Six bowl games along with the playoff games, obviously, and maybe we'll get into some more rabbit holes on the NFL, who knows. So thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys on the next one.